Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm from Chicago. In today's podcast segment, we have the honor and the privilege of interviewing Mr. Adam Pittman. He is the president of Computer Abilities Incorporated, and they're based in the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area. Adam, thanks for joining onto our show today.
I really appreciate you taking the time to have me on the show. I think it's great. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, let's get started about your background and how you got started in cyber. We did some snooping on you back on your website and on LinkedIn and did a little bit of Google searching. Tell us how you got started in cyber and how you got to where you are at today.
So, you know, 25, 26 years ago now, we started out as a computer training company, and back then, you know, there really wasn't a huge concern for cyber at all. It was very, very rare when somebody was hacking somebody. It was, you know, viruses were mostly put out there for jokes or to, you know, basically bragging rights, that sort of thing. Nobody was really ransoming money or ransoming anything. It was a completely different world. But you know, as we were doing the training, we started actually doing the work where we were trying to train people to do. And as that grew, it became apparent that cyber became, you know, more of an issue. Of course, we had antivirus on everybody, but it really took a lot more than just putting antivirus on people's computers to get them secure. There were issues with people hacking networks, people hacking you know, their own computers, like people bringing in disks at that time. Of course, remember, this is a while ago, so people did bring in their own disks, and their disks having viruses on them as well. And then, of course, people would actually, you know, would slow their computer down to run on antivirus, so people started shutting their antivirus off. So as we were doing this and as we were servicing these customers, it became apparent that we needed a much more robust way of securing our clients. And, you know, there's so much that's into that now. And you know, like I said, it kind of mutated and migrated and grew. And it's, you know, it's everywhere from having that basic antivirus on there to you know, to training and everything in between.
Okay, cool. Now, your company, Computer Abilities, is this a company that you've helped start to create? Is it your own idea, your own innovation?
It is 100% my own idea and my own innovation. Like I said, yeah, years ago, we started out as a training company, and it just kind of migrated, mutated. Customers who I was training would, you know, starting to ask us, hey, you guys do this work too? And it became apparent that there was a need, you know, in the space to actually not just teach people how to do things like set up printers and back then run MS-DOS and you know, NetWare. But it became apparent that in addition to that, they needed people to actually come out there and manage their systems for them.
I remember those days quite well. Those names bring back so many memories. when I was computers, I remember back when I was in fifth and sixth grade, I think the TRS-80, I don't know if you remember that or not.
The Trash 80s, of course I do. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that's correct. I kept bugging my dad, I want that computer when the Pocket version came out. I want that. Yeah, so anyway, I remember that really, really well. But anyway, so where are you located? Is your primary office in the Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, or are you spread out throughout the United States?
We are primarily in the Raleigh-Durham area. We're in the Research Triangle Park area in Cary, North Carolina. But we also have an office in New York City as well. I'm originally from New York City, and we have clients up there that we service as well.
Cool. Excellent. Okay. Now, are you international also? Do you have any clients overseas, or do you have a presence overseas anywhere? Or?
We do have a presence overseas. We have a operations center in India, and we have a help desk in India as well that belongs to Computer Abilities. And it's, you know, it's been phenomenal because there have been times we just could not get the help we needed here in the U.S., as I know a lot of people are struggling with. But we have been able to get very dedicated, very smart, you know, people who have their hearts in it, in our business. We've been able to employ some people who have just been wonderful and fantastic and easy to work with. So that's been a great help to us, that the whole India team.
Oh, that's excellent. Awesome. Now, how large is your company? I mean, employee size, how large are you?
Yeah, so we have about 18 employees, and we are, you know, how large we are is in terms of employees. We've got, like I said, we've got 18 employees. We've got, you know, offices here in the RTP area. And we cover Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, and a few smaller outlying towns like Hillsborough, for example, Hillsborough, North Carolina. So we cover quite a bit of territory here. And up in New York City, we cover all of Lower Manhattan and part of Midtown Manhattan, and we're going into Long Island City as well, up in New York. So that's part of Brooklyn. And I do have clients actually in some outlying areas of Brooklyn and Queens as well.
Well, yeah, New York City is a huge target market, I would assume. Now, who is, speaking of target markets, who are you trying to target? Are you doing the S&B 500 or the Feds? Or?
So, great question. So, you know, our target market is not really geographic, although it sounds like it is. But basically, we, you know, my, you know, background, basically, I was in the Air Force, but after I was in the Air Force and before I was in the Air Force, you know, my family's been in the construction industry for over 150 years up in New York City, and I was raised in that environment. So we go after construction engineering firms, architectural firms. Those are our real target markets. As far as being an SMB or a larger business, it doesn't really matter to us because we handle some small companies that have only 10 computers, but we handle some larger companies that have 150 to 200 computers each. And we also act as a co-managed company. In other words, if a company has their own IT department or has an own IT manager, we can also assist. We supplement their team with our tools and our management skills and our networking skills, and we help them maintain their network and their security. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. So kind of like staff augmentation in a way, am I correct?
Kind of like staff augmentation, but a little bit different. It's more like we have a relationship, you know, like it's our team, but we have that relationship with that IT manager, and we have certain tasks that we're tasked with, and we've got certain software that we run, and we check their security. So it's a little bit different than staff augmentation, but it's along the same lines, kind of.
Now, I was at your website before the podcast started, and I was looking at your products and services. It seems like you offer pretty much the same offering as other MSPs, if I'm correct. Tell us about some of the sweet spots in your product offering and your service offering. What's really working well right now, your bread and butter?
So we do offer, you know, a lot of companies, a lot of MSPs offer pretty much the same services. There's a few differences in our case. I've been in business for almost 26 years now, and we have some processes that have just been tried and true over the years that really work. And, you know, we have a great team of cybersecurity experts. And sometimes when you're an MSP, you don't have all that available to you. Like I said, we have 18 employees, and that seems to be a real sweet spot for us because we can handle just about anything that's thrown out to us. But in addition to those employees, we have great vendor relationships that we've had for years and years. So really, no matter what it comes to, if it's IT related, we can pretty much come up with a solution for you. In addition to that, we've come up with some very unique solutions for some of our engineering companies and our construction companies, depending on what they're doing and what's going on in their business process. One of the things that's real important to me is that we understand our clients' business, and although it might be all construction and engineering and along those lines, not every construction company operates the same. In other words, yeah, they're bidding on jobs. They've got certain software in place. They've got certain networking needs and certain file needs that are in place. But in addition to that, they might do things slightly different. So it's important to us to understand how our customers are doing business for various ways. Number one, of course, we need to support them and secure them. But number two, they might tell us something, and we might say, hey, you know what? We had a client that was doing ABC, and now they're doing XYZ, and they're more efficient, and they've been able to be more profitable. So because we've seen all that, because we understand the construction industry, because, I pretty much grew up in it, we're able to give our customers better advice, act quicker for their, on a turnaround for their needs. And really, the relationship is much stronger than just having an MSP who might handle, construction one day, insurance the next day, a doctor the next day. So that's pretty much where our specialty is, and that's pretty much where our sweet spot is.
Excellent. Do you have any customer success stories or case studies without revealing any confidential information you'd like to share with us?
Sure. We have had a company that, let me think of a really good case study, a company that was using an older accounting software package, for example, it was industry-wide. This was not an accounting package that was unusual or that was unknown to the industry. And it was really antiquated, and everybody was using it, many, many construction companies still use it today. But we've been able to, do research, work with the client, find out what their workflow process is, find out where their sweet spot is, find out where their profitability really is, and then interview and speak with other companies, other accounting software packages to come up with one size doesn't fit all. So to come up with a suite of packages that does everything that they need to do in a very efficient manner.
Excellent. Now let's segue over to the cyber threat landscape in general. How much has cybersecurity changed in the last decade? I think you're kind of alluding to that. But when has it really made the headlines like it has today?
So that's a great question. And I've got to tell you, cybersecurity has absolutely changed in the last 10 or 15 years. There's no question about it. Cybersecurity was pretty much for bragging rights or to see if they can take a company down for a little while. And some of them were just funny. Like there were some viruses that were literally kind of humorous that people would write. But that has all changed. We now live in a world where, number one, there's state-run, cyber criminals, right? So, I mean, when we think about that, we think about what's recently happened to North Korea or in North Korea, where they're trying to gain they're trying to make money by actually employing their people through a third party to American and other Western countries' IT. You've got to be very careful and really vet your people when you hire IT people, because this is a terrorist state. This is a state that we should not be doing business with, and yet they're going around the corner to do that. And when they do this, it's you hear of these stories of, oh yeah, my IT guy planted a virus in our system and brought us down or held us for ransom. And that's been happening. And, of course, there's the email. Today, you can actually purchase a subscription to a virus portal, basically, and find your make your own list, get your own list, or buy lists, and email viruses out. And you're paying for that subscription. And somebody might get that email, and depending on what you're subscribing to, they might get ransomware, or they might get something on their email that they click on that doesn't do anything, so they think, but it's actually making registry changes, you know, in their Windows registry. There's all sorts of things that are going on in the virus world and the cybersecurity world, and you've really got to be careful. You have to have the right security stack to protect you. But it's not just email, right? So, like, I mean, email's out there, and it's certainly the biggest threat is email, for sure. But in addition to that, you know, have you ever clicked on a website and you clicked on a link in a website and then you've gotten some virus or some warning or something came up? Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, yeah. There have been, like, doing that thing. There have been a couple of times, I think, not even on a link, actually. I just went straight to the website of the cyber vendor, and one time I got this warning message, like, you know, call Microsoft immediately. You know, I got
right.
And then just yesterday I got one saying, Microsoft Defender scanning your system and, you know, I got that yesterday. So immediately I just got those websites and I run a malware scan, you know, right then and the evenings to make sure, you know. And what I do for good practice is I always run a malware scan before I shut down for the night, just to be sure.
That's excellent. That's great that you do that. You know, certainly it helps, definitely helps remediate the issues if you're running a virus scan or a malware scan before and after, right, when you start your computer up and right after you shut it down. Because if you start your computer up, there could be a dormant virus. So this is another thing that was big a few years ago. I'm not seeing them as often now, but they were timed-based viruses. So you could get a virus, and it might be a month, 3 months, 6 months before the virus actually decides to set off. That was big a couple of years ago. I think that maybe because of the security software that we're using, we just don't see that anymore. But it's really good to do a virus scan when you start up and when you shut down your computer, you know, anytime. And we really recommend that people only shut their computers down. Well, they restart them every day, but they really only shut them down, you know, maybe once a week for the weekend. Or if there's imminent weather, like if there's a lightning storm in the area, you should shut your computer off, of course, and unplug it. You know, things like that. So on the whole, we recommend people leaving their computers up because, especially our clients, we push out updates and Microsoft pushes out updates to your computers. And if your computers are down, one of two things are going to happen. Either you're going to skip a couple of updates and then you're going to be in trouble because sometimes updates need other updates to run, or you're going to get an update in the middle of a presentation, and it's going to force the update, and it's going to really ruin your presentation. Does that make sense?
Right.
Have you seen? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's
I mean, I usually shut down for the night just because I'm kind of paranoid about leaving anything online, because I've had some bad experiences with a couple of Toshibas. I left it overnight. I think the screen, there's like a back screen lit problem or something, whole computer died, so I always shut. And but with Windows 10, I always seem to get those updates, and they usually, for me, I'm always checking for new updates. You know how you can go to your Windows bar on the left-hand side on Windows 10 and you click for updates? I'm always checking every couple days the newest updates, and for me, they always usually come on a Friday morning, so I'm always aware of that. But yeah,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, they can be annoying, but lately the last few updates, they just take a few minutes. Not too bad. There was one time I think I did a huge upgrade. It forced me to do it to the next version of Windows 10. That took like, I think, almost like 7 hours. It was ridiculous. But hopefully now that they won't do that. And one time one forced me to go to Windows 11, and I said, no, I'm never going to do that. So, anyway.
Yes. some of those updates take a real long time, and that's why we like to tell our clients to leave your computers on overnight so that if it does run and if it is a real long time, you know, it'll run without them, with minimal interference. So that's why we tell people to do that. But
okay.
Certainly you're doing the right thing by doing your virus scans. There's no question about that. One of the things that we see that's real important for people is that they don't rely on just a antivirus. Have you heard of next-gen antivirus?
No, I haven't.
So several of the companies out there have what they call next-gen antivirus, and it's a little bit different than the antivirus. And, there's a lot of good companies out there that do a great job, but their job is to – so one of the trends, you were asking about trends earlier, that we're seeing is that people are sending Word documents and encoded in the Word documents, whether they know it or not, if they're forwarding things, could be a command for your Microsoft PowerShell. And if it runs – if a command can run in your PowerShell without you knowing it, and it is possible, then somebody can take control of your computer, install viruses, install software anytime they want in some cases, install keyloggers so they can get your password and your username to various things, including your credit cards or bank accounts. So a good next-gen antivirus will prevent the PowerShell from running. Now, this is excellent because it stops all those things that we just talked about. The one thing that the user needs to be aware of is that sometimes when they're trying to run a fully legitimate program, the update might not have been, the update to the program might not be configured correctly in the antivirus, and so it'll stop that from running, but you simply temporarily disable your antivirus, run the program, get it up there, turn your antivirus back on, it learns it, it knows what's going on, and it brings it in for the next time. So that's what next-gen antivirus does, and that's what I strongly recommend. Well, we have it for all of our clients, and I strongly recommend anybody who's listening right now, anybody, you know, certainly look into getting a next-gen antivirus. There's some that are better than others, of course. There's some that take a lot more administration than others, but you know, in the end, if you look for and you find a next-gen antivirus, you will be so much better off than just having a normal antivirus.
Okay, yeah, I misunderstood you. I have heard of it. In fact, I've written, I think, some one or two articles on. In fact, I think what separates the next-gen firewall from like the traditional ones that their databases are always updated in real time with the threat signatures. With the ones, they take a while to push the latest threat signatures through and then your computer may or may not recognize that, and then it might be too late. So that's one thing I am advocating too, is the use of that. In fact, I think Microsoft, I'm a big Azure guy, and I think they they've got their next gen firewall too. Was it Defender? I think. It's called
Defender. So Microsoft, has Defender. The Defender that you really want, though, isn't the one that comes free in Windows. It's the one that you get through your Microsoft 365 subscription. That's the one that you really want. That's the one that does all the magic.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Now, here is a question that's kind of near and dear to my heart. When I approach prospects about, cyber solutions that I'm a reseller for, their common response is, well, why do I care? I've never been hit, so I'll never be hit again in the future. And I talked to mine the other day, and she said her client had the same mentality. The next day, he was a victim of a cyber attack. So what should businesses be most afraid of? The way they look at things, or is it the threat landscape in general, or what's your experience with that?
That's a conversation that all of us in the MSP world should be having with our clients. One of the misconceptions in cybersecurity, especially if you're a small company, is, hey, I'm a small company, they're not after me. But, you know, that's not true. What you don't realize, what people don't realize, and remember I said earlier that there are subscriptions that you can subscribe to a virus portal and get viruses and send them out to people. Well, that's happening all the time, and they get an email list, and they don't care who they're targeting. Some cyber attacks are absolutely very targeted, right? But most of them aren't. And to put one in retrospect, right? You remember the Target breach a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That actually didn't happen because they were targeting Target, no pun intended. But that happened because the Fazio Mechanical, which was a great company, which, you know, many people have used their refrigeration services, they had a computer on site, on a Target site, which they should have. And my guess is that for some reason it wasn't VLAN'd off properly. And this company, who was very mature and, you know, very savvy when it came to cybersecurity, they had a user, and it was the perfect storm. The user got an email. He was expecting the email. He was logged onto the computer at Target. He clicked on the email. It was not the email that he was expecting. He got a virus. That virus in that computer then went, because he wasn't VLAN'd off, it went into Target's credit card system, and it pulled 70 million Target customers' information out. It was no fault of Target's. You know, it was one of those things that happened to Fazio Mechanical, unfortunately, you know, but it was just like the perfect storm. So you've always got to realize that even though that was Target, that was not a targeted cyber attack. That was a poisoned email. And poisoned emails remain the number one way that cyber criminals get access to your networks. And you don't have just, you know, I hear a lot of people say, well, I don't have a strong password. I don't really care about the strong password. I don't care if somebody gets into my computer. I have nothing to hide. There's nothing in there that I care about. Well, you know, that's very fine and well if there's nothing, if you don't care about your computer. But the thing is, we're all connected. We're all connected through the Internet. We're all connected through a network for your office. If somebody gets into your computer, that could potentially give them a pathway into either somebody else's computer in your home or into your business's network. If you log on to your business remotely and you have a virus on your computer, you could transmit that virus to your business. So strong passwords are another very important part of keeping your computer secure. And I just think that when we have these conversations, and I explain to our clients, I explain to people that, look, that's true, all very, very fine and true. They're not targeting you, but the email is. And they don't care, because if they can hold something of yours ransom and they can pull money, they can make you, you know, pay them in Bitcoin or in some other cryptocurrency, which I call the currency of criminals, they can then hold your – you're going to pay. You're going to pay, or you're going to restore from a good backup if you have a good backup. So – these are the issues. So you really have to understand that I don't care if you're a one-person shop or if you've got tens of thousands of people working for you with computers, you're all in the same boat. Everybody is in the same boat. Everybody can get that poisoned email.
Right. Well, speaking of issues, I'm kind of going to backtrack just a little bit here. There are just the six key issues in general I want to talk to you about the cyber industry, you know, things that I've written about or seen. And the first one is the Internet of Things. And as you just talked about, the interconnectedness of this world, you know, this is where, you know, things in the virtual and physical world are all connected. I don't like the idea of the IoT. I think it just expands the attack surface. I've seen people with smart cars, smart, you know, things. I don't have a smart home. I still drive an 03 Honda Civic analog, you know, instrumentation car. I try to stay as technology free. I hate technology, honestly. You know, we're so inundated with it. But what are your thoughts on the IoT? I mean, do you have a smart car or smart home or
So I do have a smart car only because by default, I bought a new car and it's a smart car. It just happens to be a smart car. And, you're absolutely right when you say that IoT, right, your smart refrigerator and your smart this and your smart that, it does certainly open up for more cyber attacks. There's no question about it. We've all heard the story or the stories about the Ring camera, right, and somebody breaking into it. All that being said, take the proper steps. You could prevent 99% of those cyber attacks. And the proper steps will not break the bank. There are things like having a good, in your home, having a good home router and having it configured properly. Using strong passwords. And I even tell my clients, hey, guys, don't use passwords anymore. Use passphrases. We want you to use passphrases. And one of the things that I do for a passphrase is I come up with every quarter I've got goals that I want to meet for my business and for me personal. And I will take one of my goals and I'll turn it into a sentence. And that sentence will have, of course, uppercase, lowercase numbers and special characters. And that sentence will be much more than 12 characters. And that sentence will be my passphrase. And in addition to that, I only use my passphrase to get into my computer, then I use a different one to get into my password manager, which, by the way, creates hard passwords that I would never remember in any of my applications. And those passwords with my password manager, that works great. But that's not enough, right? So when possible, and unfortunately, the truth is not every portal has this yet, but when possible, we should all use something called multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication. And the truth is that anybody who's ever done any online banking has used it. And it's basically something you are, or something you have. So that's what multi-factor is in a nutshell. So something you know, for example, is when you log into your bank, it might ask you, what is your father's middle name, right? That's one question that it might ask you. Or what school did you go to in third grade? That's something you know. It could be something you are. It could be you have to type in a password and use face recognition or a thumbprint recognition, so you have those two things. Or it could be something you have, which would be like your phone. You log into something, and then it texts you a code, and you have like 1 to 3 minutes to put that code in, and then it lets you in. Does that make sense? Is that you understand that piece of security? So if you have those on your IoT portals, if you have multi-factor authentication with tough passwords, with maybe a password manager to get into them, if you've got those things and the router for your home router, you are already ahead of the game, and chances are it's going to be very difficult for somebody to hack into you. Not impossible, but very difficult.
Excellent. Now, another buzzword that's being kind of thrown around the cyber industry these days is artificial intelligence, AI.
Right.
And
yep.
I wrote a book about it, but I think it's such a misused term right now, and I think a lot of vendors kind of throw in that term, hype up to get sales to their customers would say, oh, I've got AI in my security. What are your thoughts on all that AI? You use AI, for that matter, in your company.
We absolutely do. Basically what that means in our case, right, is that it's your computer is, or your security software is learning the way that you use your computer, and it's adapting to that. And generally what you do with many of these security applications, and like I said, there should be a security stack that you're using, is that you'll put it in learning mode for maybe 2 weeks initially. It'll learn what's providing everything safe and secure. Of course, it learns what you're doing and how you're doing it. Then you can put it in active mode, and it still continues to learn to some extent. And all that's doing is gathering data on how you're using your computer and what you're doing. And it's blocking things. And if it blocks something and then you don't allow it, it assumes automatically, okay, I'm supposed to be blocking these. I'm going to be blocking programs with this signature moving forward. And it looks for the signature. So that's pretty much what it is. It's just a way of the computer or of the software to gather intelligence or gather data on your computer.
Okay. Thanks, Will. Now, one thing I've been, and this is probably heard about, are your clients needing cybersecurity insurance? Now, it's not like buying car insurance. It's complicated. In fact, I think the cyber insurance carriers are now making it a lot harder for businesses to get cyber insurance. What are your thoughts on that? Do your clients ask you a lot about cyber insurance? Or?
Yes, of course they do. And I always recommend that all our clients have cyber insurance for sure. And we, of course, carry cyber insurance as well. And it is getting harder. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. So the only, you know, the downfall that I'm seeing with these cyber insurance companies is they don't all ask the same questions and they don't all require the same security stack, which is unfortunate. I like to say in security, you know, if you look at computers, right, the lifetime of computers, you know, they were infants when we had DOS and all that, and then they became, you know, toddlers and we had Windows 3.0 and things grew up. And I like to say we're in our awkward teenage years right now when it comes to cyber security and cyber insurance. We're still learning what needs to be done and what we need to do to secure it so that the cyber insurance companies can, you know, can cover us. But the problem is that I see questions, different questions, and different nomenclature being used for the different cyber insurance companies. But it's very important that they have that, and it's really, you know, it's going to help you. You have to answer these questions, but it's really going to help you because they're going to ask you to check these boxes off. And the boxes are things like the, you know, artificial intelligence type of security application, you know, limiting people's access to certain folders, all the good security practices that you should be taking. The cyber insurance companies are going to make you at least tell them that you're doing it. And of course, if they investigate and they find out that you've never done it, they may not cover you, right? So you've got to be honest, and you really need to speak to your IT professional about what they're asking you to do.
Okay, excellent. Now, the COVID-19 remote workforce, now obviously this is something that maybe 2-3 years ago, we never even thought would happen. You know, when COVID started making headlines, I thought it was just a mistake there. But never did we think it would ravage the world that it has today. And, you know, I mean, a couple of good things have come out of it. You know, like, you know, we can create vaccines quicker now. And the thing with the remote workforce, everybody thought this would happen 4 or 5 years away, but now it's here and has to be permanent. How has COVID affected you? And do you guys work remotely? Or how has it affected your clients? And what are your thoughts on this remote workforce, this new model that we've got now for the American workplace?
Yeah, so we actually do, you know, we have a hybrid, like many companies have done. We've adopted a hybrid model where people go to the office on certain days and people can work from home as long as they don't have to go out to a client. If you have to go to a client, you go to a client, of course. But, yeah, I've got no problem with that. And, of course, our clients, what happened is within 45 to 60 days, all of a sudden all our clients wanted to move remote, and that was a nightmare because then we had to get them a secure VPN and make sure that their home computers, when they were logging in, those were secure as well. And the fortunate thing the industry was really, really good about was giving us tools for free that we could use for free to secure our clients for 90 days, in some cases 120 days, because this happened so quickly. And that was wonderful. But we're now, we've again, time has passed. We found some solutions that are tried and true now because it's been a couple of years. And we're using something called SASE technology for our clients for their security. And SASE, it's S-A-S-E, if you want to look it up. It's Secure Access Server Edge. And basically, it's software that we can install on the computer. And it's kind of like having a really good router on your, you know, wherever you go. So if you have a SASE software and you decide to go to Starbucks and work from Starbucks, we always say that's a no-no. But if you've got the SASE, installed on your computer, you're safe. You've got it covered. And it's managed, there's a pane of glass, single pane of glass that we can look at all our clients' SASE's computers, and we can manage them and allow certain things and deny certain things that they have to protect them, to keep them safe. So that software has been phenomenal, and it's been a game changer in the mobile space as far as I'm concerned. It really keeps you secure. We have it on all of our computers in my office, we don't just have it for our mobile users. We have it for everybody because I just think it's such great software. It's such a great technology. So we're using that, and that certainly keeps you very secure. One of the ways that it's been described, I don't know if I 100% agree with this or not, but it kind of makes you invisible to the rest of the Internet. It puts you on a VPN, but it does much more than that. It's like having a VPN on steroids.
Okay. Excellent. Now, data privacy laws, during COVID, these weren't really enforced, but now they are, like the GDPR, CCPA. And it's a very confusing realm in cyber. A lot of businesses are complaining that they're wasting a lot of time and money getting compliance. Every state's coming up with their own privacy laws. There's more confusion. Do you help clients come in compliance, like with these the privacy laws, or do you just give consulting services, or how do you manage that?
We certainly do. We certainly do compliance. And, what you would find, first of all, when you start to understand compliance is really the documentation of your security stack, right? And again, if you're right, different states have different things, but there's so many checkboxes that are the same. For example, if you're going, if you look at PCI and NIST and all and GCD, they're all 90% of it's all going to ask you to do the same thing. The rest of it is not. So all you have to do is get a really good checklist of what each one needs, and then you can check those boxes and get the software installed or the security installed or whatever it is that it's asking you to do. You can get that installed. It's not inexpensive, and I certainly recommend that if you're a company that needs compliance of some sort, whether it's HIPAA or PCI or whatever, that you speak to your MSP or your MSSP about it and make sure that they have some sort of a portal for your documentation for your compliance. And there's plenty of software companies out there that do that. Once you have that, of course, that really, really helps check those boxes. You can send out tests to make sure that everybody still has whatever they need on it, if they have the DNS filters, whatever they need for the security on their software that it's requiring, you do. And as long as you have that checked and you're checking to make sure your client is keeping those on, and you're making sure that you're sending out whatever you have to send out to make sure that you comply with, it's not as bad as you think. But again, like you mentioned, there's still a lot of confusion in it. And again, I like to say we're in that awkward teenage years of security. And that's just part of it. And it's going to be a little bit difficult, probably for the next 3 to 5 years, I imagine. But I think that things will start to gel and that I think there's going to be a lot more collaboration in the space to come up with what people should have to protect their data. Because don't forget something. This is real important. Again, going back to the person's, I don't care, I don't have anything to hide. Well, what kind of client data do you have? And how do you know that your client isn't a very private person and doesn't want that information to be exploited. I mean, that's an issue, right? You've got to take care of your clients. You're a steward of their information. So just, you know, for the moral aspect, you've got to do it. And certainly for the legal aspect, you should do it. You should keep in compliance if you're under compliancy regulation like PCI or HIPAA. So that's what, you know, that's got to be done, and it's got to be done right. And if you do it right, it's not as it's scary at first, right? It's, oh, my gosh, we have this compliancy thing. How? What are we going to do? It's not as difficult as it sounds.
Okay. Now, the last thing here is cloud security. As we saw during the pandemic, everybody was starting to now migrate to the cloud. They saw the benefits of it. Now, companies are even now starting to realize the complete benefits of going from on-prem to the cloud, like AWS or Azure. So cloud security now is becoming a hot issue, along with, you know, maintaining a zero trust framework, privileged access management, and so forth. What kind of cloud security threats have you dealt with, and what platform do you use? Do you use Azure or AWS, or what's your take on it?
Yes, yeah, so we're a Microsoft shop. So we are an Azure, you know, shop, right, when it comes to that. We love Azure. And we recommend that all of our clients have at least the Microsoft, Premier license, right? The Microsoft 365 Premier license. That gives us a lot of tools to help with their security. But, you know, it's not just the MFA is vital. If you don't have multi-factor authentication on your email, you might as well be inviting somebody to hack your email, because that's email, right? It's what everything starts with. It's a poisoned email, and people can get your information from that. So if you don't have that, you just might as well, you know, give it up right there. Get your MFA intact. Get that Premier license, because that Premier license is going to allow your security, your IT professional, to give you more guidance and to give you more security than you have if you just have the regular professional licenses. So as long as you have everything in place, you've got your multi-factor authentication set up, you've got your Premier license, and your IT professional is doing his job, you know, then you're set, because you can do things such as, for example, one of my favorite things is what we call geofencing, which basically means, for example, we can stop on our clients, we can stop anybody from logging in to the Office 365 portal outside the United States, for example, right? Now, one of my clients says, well, I'm going to go to Europe for a month and I'm going to work from Europe. Fine. What country are you going into? And we can allow that country to log into their system. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So there go ahead. Sorry.
No, I really like Azure, because I think I've written some of my clients, they are CMMC providers or whatever, but I've written a ton of stuff on the CMMC, and I think Azure has done a great job of making tools available for the defense industrial base to come in compliance with that to get their certain maturity level certification. And in fact, I know they're doing a lot of great work. Government, you know, like the GCC cloud, making their data set secure and so forth. So, and like with AWS, I've not seen anything they come out with for the CMMC. So,
yeah, you have to use third-party tools with AWS. You know, a lot of people just get upset with Microsoft often, because, you know, they throw those updates out at the worst time in the world, and I've heard people say, I hate Microsoft, and et cetera. But the truth is that Microsoft has done a stellar job with all of the security. And if your IT professional knows what he's supposed to do with it, there's no question. We love Microsoft. We love the 365 portal. We love what they've done with it and the security they've given us. And, you know, some of their products like Intune are, you know, they've become invaluable to us. So they're just a great company. They always have been, you know, and I think they will continue to be so for some time to come. So although you might get frustrated with it, realize that everything they do, you know, for the most part, they're doing really well, no question.
Yeah, I mean, I love Azure, but when it comes to Windows 10, I hate that with a passion. But anyway, that's
Well,
as we wrap up our show, and as we were talking before the podcast, it's hard to believe how fast the time has come. Now we're going to be talking about Q4 now. What do you think 2023 is going to hold next year for the cyber threat landscape? A lot of people have thought that we'd see the worst this year, but I think this year it's actually been kind of calm. You know, everybody thought with Russia, Ukraine, there'd be a lot of... I didn't really see too much. What do you think next year is going to happen?
Yeah, that's you know, boy, that's a loaded question, right? I think the reason why we haven't seen so much this year is because a lot of IT professionals realize that security is something they need to focus on, and I think a lot of their customers also realize that. So that's, as you mentioned earlier, right, to sell that client, you really have to spend this extra money for your security. That's been difficult, but with all the breaches in the news, you know, it's been a lot easier to sell. So as long as we're putting and keeping the security on our clients, I think we're okay. I don't think that we're going to see a whole lot more ransomware. I think it's pretty much played out. Don't get me wrong, it'll continue. It'll get better, but I think we're getting a handle on that now. My big concern is going to be network infiltration. And as long as, you know, it's real important to have a good firewall. Consider the firewall like the moat around your house, right? It's people have to swim through it in order to get to you. If your firewall is configured properly, I think that's going to help a great deal. But that is something that I see people lacking. And that's I really believe that some of these companies are you know, who are, and I call them companies because they are. I mean, there are actually businesses, you know, in countries that all their job is to do is to make money by gaining ransom or gaining control of somebody's computer. That's what they do. So I think, you know, as long as we do our job, it's going to be very hard for them to do theirs. And, of course, we always tell people you never, ever, ever should pay the ransom. Always right. Restore from a backup. You know, don't ever, because you could be paying, if it's a state, if it's a terrorist state, you could be paying a terrorist state, and that's, there's a federal law against that, right? So never
right.
Pay the ransom. Yeah.
Now, what reason? I think if you pay, I think it's an act of treason if you actually make a ransomware payment to a foreign government, is it?
I think it might be, and you know, that's just a good reason don't do it. Don't pay the ransom. Just don't do
right.
It. So, you know, I think that if the security companies are ramping up, there's money now in the security companies, right? So there's all sorts of great things out there. It's just worth spending the money to get them put in place and to have them managed for you. You shouldn't be managing your own security. And by the way, that's something we don't do, right? We have security. We don't depend on ourselves to check our security. We're a security company, right? We actually have a third party that checks our security with us and for us. They do invasive checks on our systems.
Yeah,
and the reason why that is because, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, the reason why that is because we troubleshoot something, and it's not unusual for a technician who's troubleshooting something for hours to forget to turn something back on, right, that they turned off while they were troubleshooting. So that happens. So we've got people checking behind us. And, I recommend to any of your listeners out there, if they are a business and they have an MSP, that they should ask their MSP, hey, who checks behind you? Who checks your stuff?
Yeah, that would have been great. You know, the SolarWinds attack probably could have been avoided if would have happened.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right.
So,
that's right.
Well, my biggest fear for next year are, the attacks on critical infrastructure. You know, the SCADA and industrial control systems, because everything's all air-gapped and everything's still legacy-based. You know, I'm afraid that there's simultaneous attack on cities, water being shut down, and, the national power grid, but So far it hasn't happened. Hopefully it will not. That could really lead to a huge failure. But anyway, so as we wrap up our show, Adam, what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you? Is it by phone, by email? What's your good contact info?
All the above. So they can certainly email us at sales@computerabilities.com or email me directly at adam@computerabilities.com. That's computerabilities.com. Or maybe the best way to do it is just call our phone. It's 919-469-5060. And they can just grab somebody and get a hold of me if they need to or speak to any one of our techs.
Cool. Sounds awesome. Well, Adam, we thank you for your time. It's certainly been insightful. And we hope to have you again on a future podcast.
Very good. I want to thank you again for having me. It's been great.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.